trying to get some change in our city, you know, to try to replace this official.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Crop Up Dinner Series and Market Showcase. The Aurora Dinner will be held July 21st from 5:30 to 9 p.m. The dinner series lets you dine on dishes built around Oregon's specialty crops that are grown in the local regions surrounding each dinner site. It has been designed to increase awareness of the bountiful diversity of Oregon's specialty crops, including fruits, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and nursery crops. Again, that's the Crop Up Dinner Series and Market Showcase, July 21st from 5:30 to 9 p.m. at 15210 Northeast Miley Road in Aurora. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 6 o'clock. In a few moments, you'll be back listening to our live coverage of the 2016 Republican National Convention. And just so you know, you can listen to us at 91.9 FM K220HR Hood River and 104.3 FM K282BH Philomath.
Friends, the 5 million men and women of the NRA will fight without apology for your right to protect your life. But we are on the cusp. We are on the cusp of losing this great American freedom, and with it, this great nation. The only way we save it is by electing Donald Trump the next president of the United States. Thank you and God bless you.
Well, we got to the very end of that speech there. Again, that was Chris Cox, Executive Director of the NRA Institute for Legislative Action. This is Pacifica Radio's coverage of the RNC in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm Mitch Jezerich. I'm here with Askia Muhammad and John Nichols, political correspondent with The Nation magazine. Well, sorry we missed some of that beginning of that speech. A lot going on with guns in this country
now. I think I could probably tell you what was said without having listened. No, I did listen to some of it. You know, Chris Cox, a former Republican congressman who's taken over as head of the NRA. This is an important thing to understand. 20 years ago in the United States, the National Rifle Association tried to play politics on both sides of the aisle. And there were a good number of Democrats who were aligned with the NRA, who voted with it. There's still a few. But clearly, the National Rifle Association has become, you know, one of the main groupings that underpins the Republican Party today. And it's interesting if you watch this party and this dynamic that's taken place. Donald Trump has pretty much rolled over this party. He has come in and made himself the man, to the extent that, you know, I think it's fair to say that tonight, when he was nominated, the party of Lincoln became the party of Trump. But
is it Trump's party?
Well, we'll go into that for a second, because there's some real debate about it. But that's where it got interesting, because there are certain groups that Donald Trump pays homage to, pays respect to, that he bows down to. And one of them is the NRA. He went to them and asked for their support. He has made it clear that, you know, he'll do what they he'll follow their line. That's an important thing to understand, because Trump says no to a lot of people. Frankly, he does his own thing.
John Nichols.
Yeah.
As we listen on radio, we can't see what people can see here, or people watching on TV. and so perhaps you noticed, I didn't, was when Richard Cox speaking, did he have his fingers crossed behind his back when he said, regardless of race, regardless?
Oh, yeah. Well,
come on. Now, the police union here wanted to suspend the open carry law for a week so that the new Black Panthers and others could not carry guns here in Cleveland.
Yeah, notably, we watched the NRA struggle for days to comment on the shooting in the St. Paul suburbs.
Philando Castile, did they ever?
Well, they put out this weird kind of thing saying they're still kind of investigating it, right, or looking into it. Now, the interesting thing is, here's a guy, I think your point is an incredibly important one, you know, that here's a case where they could have stepped up and right away and said, you know, look, we defend the right to, you know, do concealed carry. They didn't.
With a license.
Right. Oh, totally. Yeah. And in fact, was by all accounts trying to explain that exact reality. I mean,
that's what police officers do. I'm a police officer when they're stopped. I'm a police officer and I am armed. And then they show their identification. This is what he said. I'm armed. I have a license. Let me get it. Bang.
And we show our, and it is a respect for that, that it's allowed by the law. But, and I mean, I think this has been a terrible struggle with the NRA. I mean, they frankly, were not particularly responsive to a series of incidents where, you know, if they were really committed to gun ownership and that was what they wanted, that's what they believed in, there are a number of places where they could have stepped up and, in fact, done, frankly, an outreach, if you will, to communities that they haven't always been connected to. But it seems as if that outreach never happens. It never quite occurs. And that's true of an awfully lot of what we've seen here on the floor tonight. And you know, when I was down there on the floor, I was struck by how many delegations did have an African American member announce Trump's votes.
John, I'm just going to – Donald Trump is speaking via video.
Yeah,
let's take a listen to what that is.
Unbelievable evening. Today has been a very, very special day. Watching my children put me over the top earlier, the party seal, I mean, what we did, getting the party's nomination – I'll never forget it. It's something I will never, ever forget. A little over 1 year ago, I announced my candidacy for president. And with your vote today, this stage of the presidential process has come to a close. Together, we've achieved historic results with the largest vote total in the history of the Republican Party. This is a movement, but we have to go all the way. I'm so proud to be your nominee for President of the United States. I look forward to sharing my thoughts with you on Thursday night on how we build a brighter and more hopeful future for all Americans. It's an honor to run on a ticket with Governor Mike Pence, who is an incredible man and who will make a great, great vice president. I'll be with him in Cleveland tomorrow night. And we'll be together again on Thursday night. And by the way, we are going to win the state of Ohio. And also, of course, we're going to win the presidency and bring real change and leadership back to Washington. This is going to be a leadership, by the way, that puts the American people first. We're going to bring back our jobs. We're going to rebuild our depleted military and take care of our great veterans. We're going to have strong borders. We're going to get rid of ISIS. And we're going to restore law and order. We have to restore, and quickly, law and order among many and just so many other things. And I'll be discussing with that Thursday night. We'll be talking all about it. But together, most importantly, we are going to make America great again. Have a fantastic evening. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'll see you on Thursday night. And we will win in November. Thank you.
Donald Trump in a video address to the RNC.
That's two nights in a row. The first night.
Coming tomorrow night and the next. Too.
And right. So he's really getting a lot of FaceTime here. He says, make America great again. Last night, make America safe again. Tonight, make America work again. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I always go for the comic relief. The joke is always in me. Walking down the street, there's a bar, and it says, yesterday, soup of the day, beer. Today, soup of the day, whiskey. And their motto, make America drunk again.
Yeah. There we go, finally.
Mitch McConnell, who is the Republican majority leader in the Senate, is now speaking. Mm-hmm. Let's hear what he has to say, and then, John, we'll get your analysis.
As a young child in the South, I was struck with polio and forced to stay off my feet for 2 years. That experience taught me an abiding gratitude for my parents. And it also taught me how to wait, which comes in handy when you're the leader of the U.S. Senate. More than anything, though, my job has taught me the value of trust, how to distinguish between people who are in this to serve others and people who are in it for themselves. I'm here to tell you, Hillary Clinton will say anything, do anything, and be anything to get elected president. And we cannot allow it. The American people are tired of hearing about the bounty of government while the cost of caring for a family or meeting daily expenses grows out of reach. Over the past few years, they've seen government abuse their office and get rewarded for it. They've seen the middle class actually shrink. And in the midst of this, they've raised a very simple complaint. Who's looking out for us? It's not Hillary. I've had my differences with Barack Obama, but I'll give him credit for this. At least he was upfront about his plans to move America to the far left. To the far left. Not Hillary. She lied about her emails. She lied about her server. She lied about Benghazi. She even lied about sniper fire. Why, even she lied about why her parents named her Hillary. So I ask you a simple question. At a moment when so many feel betrayed by their government, why in the world would Democrats put forward such a candidate? Hillary has changed her positions so many times, it's impossible to tell where the conviction ends and the ambition begins. In 2010, she said Iran could enrich uranium. In 2014, she said she's always argued against it. Once a backer of the Keystone Pipeline, last year she opposed it. She used to be against sanctuary cities, then she claimed she was for them, and now we're not sure where she is. Friends, not since Baghdad Bob has there been a public figure with such a tortured relationship with the truth. Fortunately, there's a clear choice before us, and it's not Hillary. You know what the next 4 years will look like with Hillary, and you know that if Hillary is president, we'll continue to slide, distracted by the scandals that follow the Clintons like flies. 2 years ago, voters delivered a clear verdict on the Obama years by sending a freshman class of rock star Republicans to the Senate and delivering us a majority that I promised to make you proud of. We'd never hesitate to confront the president, but we'd also do the hard work of tackling urgent problems head on. And we delivered on that promise. We put Obamacare repeal on the president's desk. He vetoed it. Donald Trump would sign it. We passed a bill to finally build the Keystone Pipeline. Obama vetoed it. Donald Trump would sign it. We passed a bill to defund Planned Parenthood. Obama vetoed it. Donald Trump would sign it.
Again, that's Mitch McConnell. He is the Senate Majority Leader speaking on the floor of the RNC. Coming up after that, we'll have House Speaker Paul Ryan. We'll bring you a little bit of that as well. John Nichols, mm-hmm. So there we heard him say Donald Trump will sign all of these things. He's now supporting Donald Trump. How do you think he really feels about Donald Trump?
Well, look, I think he feels about Donald Trump in this way. He's had a struggle to become the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. That is his goal for a very long time, pretty close to a life goal. And he was a Senate aide before he came up. And it is something he desperately wants to cling to. This electoral cycle... he should, by reasonable measures, reasonable balances, lose that position. Number of seats up, the places where they're up. he will absolutely lose that position if Donald Trump is a weak contender, if Donald Trump does not play well in November. Trump does not have to win for McConnell to maintain his gig, but Trump has to hold his own. And so as far as Mitch McConnell is concerned, whatever is required to advance Donald Trump, he will do. Personally, I think, you know, look, he's a creature of Washington. McConnell's been in Washington forever. He loves the Washington world. I have absolutely no question that for a million different reasons, Donald Trump is not somebody he has any taste for whatsoever, literally. I mean, this is not a guy you'd invite to his cocktail party, except to ask for a campaign contribution. But doesn't matter. And for McConnell, who is much more a classic old-school ward healer politician coming out of Louisville, which is a very intense political town, this makes total sense. It's the party doing it, not a question. For Ryan, it's a tougher game. Ryan considers himself a philosopher prince and believes he's the smartest guy. He's been told so many times he's the smartest guy in the room that he's actually, you know, pretty sure that is the case. And so because he had read a couple of Ayn Rand books, you know, he believes that he deserves some sort of higher regard. McConnell doesn't think that way. McConnell doesn't think he's the smartest guy in the room. He doesn't think he's, you know, McConnell thinks, you know, he's a politician. So Ryan, you'll hear more tortured remarks from. Right?
Tonight, you think coming up next?
Yeah, he'll come up. He'll say Trump's name because that has to be done.
McConnell, in the part of the speech that we heard, hardly ever mentioned Trump's name. He trashed Hillary, Hillary, and finally said Obama wouldn't sign, Trump would sign. Obama didn't sign, Trump will sign.
You got it.
And he didn't mention his name, so he's obviously not so infatuated with him and really was not a supporter of his to begin with.
But he's smart enough politically to find a way to take the unifying reality of this convention, which is disdain for Barack Obama and disdain for Hillary Clinton, and connect that to reason to vote for Trump. So he gets the applause line from
everybody.
You mentioned the
arithmetic, which does not favor him.
Right.
In 2014, there were 25 Democrats in vulnerable positions up for re-election and only 4 or 5 Republicans. This year, it's 25 Republicans.
It's almost the reverse. Yeah.
In vulnerable positions in states up for re-election, in states that Obama carried, and only 4 or 5 Democrats. So the arithmetic, not geometry, not trig, the arithmetic says it's a heavy lift for McConnell to keep his job.
Absolutely. And it would be an untenable project. It would not be possible. It wouldn't be worth getting up tomorrow morning if Trump was doomed politically, right? If you're dragging that ticket down, if the enthusiasm is gone, it just doesn't work. So that's why McConnell, who is a careerist, I mean, he's a Washington, D.C. inside guy, is going to do his, he'll do his duty. And you're seeing a lot of doing the duty here tonight. This is, to me, it's one of the more fascinating conventions. I was sitting down with the Utah delegation as the roll call was being done. Utah was absolutely united against Trump. They never liked Trump. He's even in trouble there this fall in Utah because it's such a socially conservative state that just doesn't have a taste for this guy. So it was hilarious. 201, the 40-member Utah delegation, every time another state voted for Trump, they would all roll their eyes. They were all like, oh.
In fact, Mia Love, the African-American Congress member from Utah, did not come.
Well, and interestingly enough, it was a fascinating thing with her because the day that she announced she wasn't coming, Trump's people floated her name as a possible running mate.
Wow.
And so, not that they love Mia Love. It was, in fact, that they were looking for ways to suggest they were open to all kinds of folks and different people. But the bottom line is Mia Love is a classic example of what we're talking about. She's in a tough reelection campaign in a district that is very closely divided, the Salt Lake City area. And she wasn't going to go come and hang out with Donald Trump because that's not good for her politically. There's an awful lot of Republicans who aren't hanging around with Donald Trump this week but are back home campaigning. Very, very notable.
Now, you mentioned the TV panning the audience as the roll call was going on and showing African Americans. They must have shown the same one once, more than once, because there's only 25 African American delegates and maybe 4 or 5 alternates. Only 25 African American delegates, which is about 1%. That's half of what was at 2012.
I'm glad you brought that up, because here's a very interesting thing. They did move some of the African-American delegates up to the front, to the microphone, to announce the states, right? And that's a conscious effort to signal, oh, wow, we do have some diversity here. But here's a little test of diversity. I'm a historian of the Republican Party. Spent a lot of time studying this party. And, in fact, working on a big book project on it. And so it happens. I have all the records of the conventions going back to the 19th century. They have roughly the same number of African-American delegates at this convention as they had at the 1888 Republican convention. Now, you imagine that. We're going back to Jim Crow times.
Then we're talking about the party of Lincoln. Right. Well, I mean, the Republican Party has changed over the years.
Well, also, you were talking about Reconstruction, which was the wonderful...
And you're talking about Hayes-Tilden Compromise when...
Which began to take it apart.
Yes.
But there were still these folks, and this is what's fascinating about it. At that 1888 Republican National Convention, if you can imagine the transition of this party, the temporary chairman of the convention was an African-American. And in fact, Frederick Douglass got a vote for vice president at the convention.
John Nichols, stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's coverage of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, along with Askia Muhammad and Mitch Jezrich. Paul Ryan is now speaking on the convention floor, so we now go to it.
Students of trivia will recall that last time around I was your nominee for vice president. It was a great honor. It was a great honor, even if things didn't work out quite according to the plan. Hey, I'm a positive guy. I found some other things to keep me busy. And I like to look at it this way. The next time that there's a State of the Union address, I don't know where Joe Biden or Barack Obama are going to be, but you'll find me right there on the rostrum with Vice President Mike Pence and President Donald Trump. Democracy is a series of choices. We Republicans have made our choice. Have we had our arguments this year? Sure we have. You know what I call those? Signs of life. Signs of a party that's not just going through the motions, not just mouthing new words for the same old stuff. Meanwhile, what choice has the other party made in this incredible year filled with so many surprises? Here we are, at a time when men and women in both parties so clearly, so undeniably, want a big change in direction for America, a clean break from a failed system. And what does the Democratic Party establishment offer? What is their idea of a clean break? They are offering a third Obama term brought to you by another Clinton. And you're supposed to be excited about that. For a country so ready for change, it feels like we've been cleared for takeoff and then somebody announced we're all going back to the gate. It's like we've been on hold forever, waiting and waiting to finally talk to a real person, and somehow we've been sent back to the main menu. Watch the Democratic Party convention next week. That four-day infomercial of politically correct moralizing. And let it be a reminder of all that is at stake in this election. You can get through 4 days of it with a little help from the mute button. But four more years of it? Not a chance. Not a chance. Look. The Obama years are almost over. The Clinton years are way over. 2016 is the year America moves on. From now to November, we will hear how many different ways progressive elitists can find to talk down to the rest of America. To tell the voters that the Obama years have been good for you, that you should be grateful, and well, now it's Hillary's turn. The problem is really simple. The problem here is very simple. There is a reason people in our country are disappointed and restless. If opportunity seems like it's been slipping away, that's because it has. And liberal progressive ideas have done exactly nothing to help. Wages never seem to go up. The whole economy feels stuck. And millions of Americans, middle class security is now just a memory. Progressives like to talk, like our president, like to talk forever about poverty in America. And if high sounding talk did any good, we'd have overcome those deep problems long ago. This explains why, under the most liberal president we have had so far, poverty in America is worse, especially for our fellow citizens who are promised better and who need it most. The result is a record of discarded promises, empty gestures, phony strawman arguments, reforms put off forever, shady power plays like the one that gave us Obamacare, constitutional limits brushed off as nothing, and all the while, dangers in the world downplayed, even as the threats go bolder and come closer. It's the last chapter of an old story. Progressives deliver everything except progress. Yet, we know better than most. We know better than to think that Republicans can win only on the failures of Democrats. It still comes down to a contest of ideas, which is really good news, ladies and gentlemen, because when it's about ideas, the advantage goes to us. Against the dreary backdrop of arrogant bureaucracies, pointless mandates, reckless borrowing, willful retreat from the world, and all that progressives have in store for us, the Republican Party stands as the great enduring alternative party. We believe in making government, as Ronald Reagan said, not the distributor of gifts and privilege, but once again the protector of our liberties. Let the other party go on making its case for more government control over every aspect of our lives, more taxes to pay, more debt to carry, more rules to follow, more judges who just make it up as they go along. We, in this party, we are committed to a federal government that acts again as a servant, accountable to the people, following the Constitution, and venturing not one inch beyond the consent of the governed. We in this party offer a better way for our country, based on fundamentals that go back to the founding generation. We believe in a free society, where aspiration and effort can make the difference in every life, where your starting point is not your destiny, and where your first chance is not your only chance. We offer a better way for America with ideas that actually work. A reformed tax code that rewards free enterprise instead of just enterprising lobbyists. A reformed healthcare system that operates by free choice instead of by force and doesn't leave you answering to cold, clueless bureaucrats. A commitment to a renewed commitment to building a 21st century military and giving our veterans the care that they were promised and the care that they earned. And we offer a better way for dealing with persistent poverty in this country. A way that shows poor Americans the world beyond liberal warehousing and check writing into the life everyone can find with opportunity and independence. The happiness of using your gifts and the dignity of having a job. And you know what? None of this will happen under Hillary Clinton. Only with Donald Trump and Mike Pence do we have a chance at a better way. And last point. Let the other party go on and on with its constant dividing up of people. always playing one group against the other, as if group identity were everything. In America, aren't we all supposed to be and see beyond class, see beyond ethnicity, or all these other lines drawn to set us apart and lock us into groups? Real social progress is always a widening of the circle of concern and protection. It's respect and empathy overtaking blindness and indifference. It's understanding that by the true measure, we are all neighbors and countrymen, called each one of us to know what is right and kind and just, and to go and do likewise. Everyone is equal. Everyone has a place. No one is written off, because there is worth and goodness in every life. Straight from the Declaration of Independence, that is the Republican ideal. And if we won't defend it, who will? So much that you and I care about. So many things that we stand for in the balance in this coming election. Whatever we lack going into this campaign, we should not lack for motivation. In the plainest terms I know, it is all on the line. So let's act that way. Let's act that way. Let's use the edge we have, because it is still what earns the trust and the votes. This year of surprises and dramatic turns can end in the finest possible way, governing when America elects a conservative governing majority. We can do this. We can earn that mandate if we don't hold anything back, if we never lose sight of the stakes, if we never lose sight of what's on the table. Our candidates will be giving their all. They'll be giving their utmost. And every one of us has got to go and do the same. So what do you say? What do you say? What do you say that we unify this party? What do you say that we unify this party at this crucial moment when unity is everything? Let's take our fight to our opponents with better ideas. Let's get on the offensive and let's stay there. Let's compete in every part of America and turn out of the polls like every last vote matters, because it will. Fellow Republicans, what we have begun here, let's see this thing through. Let's win this thing. Let's show America our best and nothing less. Thank you. Thank you. And God bless.
Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives Paul Ryan speaking at the RNC. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's coverage of the Republican National Convention. I'm Mitch Jesrich, along with Askia Muhammad. We still have here with us John Nichols of The Nation magazine. John Nichols, I get the sense that might have been the most important speech tonight of this convention.
That was the first actual speech of the convention. Seriously. That was the
Did he offer better ideas?
Oh, my friend.
He said, we've got better ideas. No. Do they have better ideas?
No, he offered a rehash of stuff that he's been proposing and others have been proposing for quite a while. And many of them ideas that are 25, 30 years old. He's essentially an acolyte of Jack Kemp. And Kemp spread a vision that was less harsh in its language, but ultimately was, you know, very much the old kind of Reagan model of suggesting that we could give you a lot of opportunity by getting out of your way, but not actually helping.
What was he doing tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what he was doing. Look, first off, he gave what I would argue is probably the best speech of his career. That was a good speech. It was constructed well. It got the crowd to its feet naturally, not with like cheap.
Wait a minute. You mean at the end, before he started raising his voice, the cheer went up and there wasn't some cheerleader down there?
I don't think so.
With
signs
saying applaud, applaud, applaud.
No, I think this was genuine. And I'll tell you why. Here's what he did here. He basically said to the many camps in this convention, and this is not a united convention. I was struck by being on the floor of how there's like five or six different groupings. I won't go through them all, but people all the way from folks who absolutely – so folks on the floor who aren't voting for Trump, all the way over to folks who are all in. What he did was he constructed an argument that said at the end, you know, look, we had a lot of fights. Let's go for it. Let's just do this thing. Let's get ourselves a what he referred to as a conservative governing majority. Now, that was a very unifying speech. It was well done in that regard. Now, obviously, our friend asked the key question. Is there a new set of ideas? Is there a new vision here? No, there is not. But – Remember, for this party, which has been ripped apart, which is literally, you know, this is a party that does not have a there at this point. Paul Ryan, their former nominee for vice president, gave them a little bit of there, gave them a little something to look at. Now, why did he do it? Why did he rise to his best speech tonight? I'll tell you exactly, at least to my view. Paul Ryan, like Mitch McConnell, first off wants to keep his job, right? But Paul Ryan is a very young man with an immense amount of ambition. He is also politically astute and historically astute. In 1964, the Republican nominee nominated Barry Goldwater for president of the United States. Most of the smart people at that convention knew Barry Goldwater wasn't going to be the president, right? At least anybody who's in the know. Many responsible Republicans distanced themselves from Goldwater. Mitt Romney's dad did. So did Rockefeller, John Lindsay, Kenneth Keating, the senator from New York. Many people distanced. One guy didn't. Their former presidential nominee, this former vice president tonight, former presidential nominee, Richard Nixon, stood up and said, you know, we may have had our differences, but I'm a Republican. I'm going for it. He campaigned for him. He did his best to pull the party together. Genius move, because 4 years later, when the Goldwater people are mad at the Rockefeller people still, everybody's still angry, right? They all remembered, well, there was one guy that tried to, you know, put his arm around us all and keep us together. Richard Nixon. I don't like him that much, but he's better than the other guy. He's better, you know. And so Nixon found his way through the middle to pull it together and become the nominee. I think Paul Ryan, the translation of Paul Ryan's speech tonight is, I'd like to be that guy 4 years from now.
That's what I was going to ask you. And you know Paul Ryan pretty well, John Nichols.
Yeah, yeah. I've been around him. My dad and his dad went to law school together.
He also said something that he contradicted himself in one sentence. He said, we're going to, speaking to the minorities or the poor, the really needy, we're going to show you how to join the middle class, which he just said is shrinking.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. If there's a competition, if the line is getting smaller, the funnel is getting smaller, and you poor people and black people come, who you think's going to get elbowed to the back of the line?
Look, here's the bottom line on Paul Ryan. His entire career has been about shredding the safety net, right? Bartering off Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, to vouchers and to put him on the stock market. This is not a guy who's out there to give people some base to stand on in which to rise. This is a guy who's going to say, you know, we're taking it all apart here. Good luck. And there's a cruelty to that, which is rooted in, you know, he doesn't say it anymore. He's abandoned her. But he said less than a decade ago that the reason he went into politics was from reading Ayn Rand, reading The Virtue of Selfishness, the idea that, you know, you just, the only thing you want in politics is to not have a government or anybody there helping you out. You got to do it on your own. That's who Paul Ryan is. Bottom line on it is he's not changed. There's no change in this guy. But in this party, at this point, he played a role that is significant, and it was that of the attempted, we'll see if he succeeds, the attempted unifier.
John Nichols, thank you for being here.
Honored to be with
again,
you, as
John
always.
Nichols,
what a great
bunch. We hope you'll come back in the next couple of days. We know you're busy,
man.
But
no.
You know, we got 4 hours every night. So.
If I'm too busy for Pacifica, then I'm making a mistake.
John Nichols, political correspondent with The Nation magazine. In a moment, we're going to talk to David K. Johnston, but first, we do want to return to the RNC floor. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is now speaking. We're going to go to it for a couple of minutes, and then we'll return to David K. Johnston.
Being heard in this hall tonight, and those voices want Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States. But everybody, this election is not just about Donald Trump. No, it's also about his Democratic opponent, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, in the past few weeks, we've seen the Justice Department refuse to prosecute her. Over the last 8 years, we've seen this administration refuse to hold her accountable for her dismal record as Secretary of State. So let's do something fun tonight. Tonight, as a former federal prosecutor, I welcome the opportunity to hold Hillary Rodham Clinton accountable for her performance and her character. All right, we're getting there. Give me a few more minutes, we'll get there. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to present the facts to you. You, tonight, sitting as a jury of her peers, both in this hall and in your living rooms around our nation. You see, since the Justice Department refuses to allow you to render a verdict, I'm going to present the case now on the facts against Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, she was America's chief diplomat. So let's look around the world at the violence and the danger today in every region that has been infected by her flawed judgment. But I'm going to be specific so that you can render your verdict tonight on the basis of the facts. Let's go to North Africa. She was the chief engineer of the disastrous overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya. Libya today, after Hillary Clinton's grand strategy, their economy's in ruins, there's death and violence on the streets, and ISIS is now dominating that country. So I'm going to ask you this. Hillary Clinton, as a failure for ruining Libya and creating a nest for terrorist activity by ISIS, answer me now, is she guilty or not guilty? In Nigeria, Hillary Clinton amazingly fought for 2 years to keep an Al-Qaeda affiliate off of the terrorist watch list. Now, what happened because of this reckless action by the candidate who is the self-proclaimed champion of women all around the world? These Al-Qaeda terrorists abducted hundreds of innocent young women 2 years ago. These schoolgirls are still missing today. And what was the solution from the Obama-Clinton team? A hashtag campaign. So now let's figure it out. Let's decide. Hillary Clinton, as an apologist for an Al-Qaeda affiliate in Nigeria, resulting in the capture of innocent young women, is she guilty or not guilty? See, she fights for the wrong people. She never fights for us. She doesn't get the real threats that America faces. So now let's go to China. In China, Hillary Clinton praised the Chinese government for buying our debt to finance Barack Obama's bloated stimulus plan. She was so desperate for Chinese cash, she promised to oppose the Buy American provision in the stimulus bill in exchange for the cash to finance a huge expansion of federal government spending. So, Hillary Clinton, putting big government spending financed by the Chinese ahead of good-paying jobs for middle-class Americans, is she guilty or not guilty? Let's go to Syria. In Syria, imagine this. She called President Assad a reformer. She called Assad a different kind of leader. There's now 400,000 dead. Think about that. 400,000 dead at the hands of the man that Hillary defended. So we must ask this question. Hillary Clinton, as an awful judge of the character of a dictator and butcher in the Middle East, is she guilty or not guilty? Next in Iran, she launched the negotiations that brought about the worst nuclear deal in history. Let me be clear. America and the world are measurably less safe and less respected because of the Iran deal that Hillary helped cut. Period.
And again, we are listening to Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey from the floor of the Republican National Convention. This is Pacifica Radio's coverage of the RNC, along with Askia Mohammed. I'm Mitch Jezerich. We're going to change gears a little bit because we have a guest on the telephone that we're very excited to have with us this evening, and that is David K. Johnston. David K. Johnston is an investigative journalist. He's also an author, a specialist in economics and tax issues. In 2001, he won the Pulitzer Prize for beat reporting. He is the author of the forthcoming book, The Making of Donald Trump, the culmination of nearly 30 years of reporting on Donald Trump himself. He joins us again on the telephone. David K. Johnston, I thank you greatly for taking time to join us tonight.
Glad to be here, Mitch.
I do want to dive in to Donald Trump and his tax, his taxes. You've written about that as well as his business practices. But first, I do want to give you an opportunity to weigh in anything that you've seen or your overall impression about the RNC this week.
Well, I thought a couple of things. First of all, that the Melania speech issue last night was like, you can't make this stuff up, that you have Melania Trump channeling, and no matter how much they deny it, Michelle Obama, of all people, is astonishing. I also thought that John Nichols was quite right tonight in everything he said about Paul Ryan. I have written very, very critical pieces as a columnist about Paul Ryan, but Paul Ryan is a public servant. He is different from Donald Trump in that regard. You and I probably don't think very much of his ideas, and I've shown that he practices what I call one-sided math. But he is, in fact, doing what he honestly believes is best for the country. And the way you defeat that is by having better ideas or showing the flaws in his ideas. And I have wondered, how is Ryan going to avoid the stench that will arise from the racist nature of the Trump campaign? Well, look what he did tonight. We are all Americans. We are the party, the Republicans, of all the people. We're the ones who want to have opportunity. And he implicitly criticized Donald Trump without saying so. And I think that 4 or 8 or 12 or 16 years from now, you're going to see Paul Ryan nominated. And I think you may well see him become president of the United States.
David K. Johnston, let's turn to Donald Trump. One of the big things in this campaign so far is Donald Trump's refusal to release his taxes,
right?
His tax forms. He says he wants to wait until the audit is done on that, and that there's nothing to worry about. But you've done research into Donald Trump's income tax returns from the 1990s. What did you find?
Well, back to 1978. We know that Donald Trump did not pay any income taxes in 1978 and 79. This is 10 years after he graduated from college, because he reported, as the law allows real estate developers to do, negative income. So he could live a very lavish lifestyle, but for tax purposes, he reported negative income. We know that he paid no income taxes in 1984 because of two tax appeals he filed that I wrote about in my column for the Daily Beast and Investopedia, and I'll come back to that in a second. And we know from New Jersey Casino Control Commission records that he didn't pay any taxes in the early 90s. And frankly, I'd be shocked if he's paid any taxes in any year in the last 20 years. If he has, it's been nominal compared to his imagined and repeatedly stated great wealth. Part of this is because Congress has special rules for three groups of people in America: hedge fund and private equity managers. That's why we never saw a full record of Mitt Romney's taxes when he was the sole owner, not the manager, as was reported by me and one of the reporters, but the sole owner of Bain Capital Management. Mitt Romney legally could live tax-free. Donald Trump benefits from a special rule that almost all Americans are excluded from, the tiny segment of Americans who are eligible for it, that allows them to live tax-free because they are full-time real estate professionals. In addition, 1984, when Donald filed appeals of his New York State, New York City income taxes, a whole bunch of stuff came into the public record, and it showed that Donald filed what's called a Schedule C. That's what freelancers file. It's what I file for my book writing and lecture income. And he showed no income, but he took over $600,000 in deductions. Well, I know you'll be shocked to hear that the state and city auditors pulled this return and said, excuse me, please show us the substantiation for this, invoices, credit card receipts, things like that. None were provided. But what really happened that was astonishing is that Jack Mitnick, the lawyer and accountant who for about 20 years, more than 20 years, prepared Donald Trump's tax returns, he was shown the tax return that was in the record. And he said, that's my signature, but I didn't prepare that document. and it was a photocopy, and they could never find the original. Now, I won my first national reporting award more than 40 years ago for exposing a corrupt Michigan lawmaker who used a photocopy machine to put somebody else's signature on documents. And there's every reason to believe there was a fraudulent tax return filed here. We're never going to see Donald Trump's tax returns unless there's some legal action brought against him by the IRS, which appears unlikely. And his excuse, I'm under audit. Well, Mark Everson, who was George W. Bush's Internal Revenue Commissioner, and a whole bunch of tax professors, and me, and I teach tax law at Syracuse University, though I'm not a lawyer, have all said that's nonsense. There's no reason not to release your returns. But let's accept his argument that you can't do that. He, by his own account, is not under audit for the years up through 2011. So let's see your 2011, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, back to zero tax returns, Donald. He's never going to show you those.
Never going to see them.
We're never going to see them. Even if he gets elected, he'll come up with another reason. We're not gonna see him. And he may get elected. Do not make the mistake of thinking he may not. He may well be the next president of the United States.
Why do you say that?
Well, Donald has been working on running for president since 1985. He ran for president in 2000 and made a profit doing so, according to his account of what he did. He ran on the fringe Reform Party ticket. He ran in 2012, and everybody in the journalism business treated this as a serious campaign, except Lawrence O'Donnell of NBC and MSNBC and me. We independently realized he was running for a new contract. But this time around, Donald's show was in danger of being canceled. And if you're Donald Trump, can you imagine what it would be like to pick up the Daily News in New York and the Post, the two tabloids that he reads every day, and see the front page headline, NBC to Trump, you're fired. And that would be a near-death experience for him. Secondly, if he's going to run, this is the time to do it, as he's been thinking about for years. And Donald, remember, believes he's superior to the rest of us. I mean, you're all losers. You either appreciate and worship Donald's greatness and recognize his greatness, or you're a loser. And he's very smart tactically. Look at all the people he beat to get the nomination. He did it fair and square. Now, he did it with an awful lot of free media because he's fascinating to watch. And every television executive knows that if they switch from Donald Trump to any of the other candidates, people just turn off the TV. But people, he's like watching a car wreck, you know. People look at it and they gawk. And Donald, there are so many people who believe, for example, as I had a very well-educated executive tell me within the past week at a social event, well, we can't have Hillary in the White House. She killed all those people. And I said, what are you talking about, Benghazi? He says, no, all those other people she had murdered. Listen to what the way that Chris Christie just approached this. She's guilty of this. She's guilty of that. Well, how come she's never been charged with anything? Now, I'm not endorsing Hillary Clinton, but the attack will resonate with many, many people.
In our remaining minutes here, David K. Johnson, I want to ask you about some other things you've been writing about with Donald Trump, including his ties to the mob.
Well, Donald, in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, which will be out 2 weeks from today, and we sold all around the world, goes through all of his long history of dealings with mobsters, swindlers, con artists. Donald Trump sought mercy for a major cocaine trafficker in a way that should have cost him his casino license. Why in the world would Donald Trump, who doesn't drink, who doesn't do drugs, go to bat for a major cocaine trafficker who, when he gets out of the joint, after serving only 3 years while the little fish got 20, moves into Trump Tower? Clearly, Donald didn't needed this guy to be his friend and not his enemy. We don't know why. But what we know is he did that. I mean, imagine what the news would be if Barack Obama had written a letter while running for president seeking leniency for a guy in the drug business who was moving 1,500 pounds of coke at a time and who was marijuana, and who was personally handling the cocaine. Donald Trump has repeatedly been involved in business deals with a violent convicted felon who took the broken stem end of a margarita glass and shoved it into a man's face, who was one of the key people, if not the key person, in a huge stock swindle on Wall Street that cheated all sorts of people out of their money and benefited the Genovese and Gambino crime families. Donald traveled with this man in his private plane. He was photographed with him and interviewed with him in two cities in Colorado, in Fort Lauderdale, in New York. And yet, under oath, Donald has said, hardly know the guy, wouldn't recognize him if he was in the room. Nobody in the news business is raising these issues. So I've been raising them for the last year in about two dozen pieces, and we wrote this book where I go through his whole life, and it's full of stuff that either you've never heard or I give you context to it so you can understand who he is, where he came from, and what he's really about. And one of the most troubling things about Donald Trump isn't just all these lifelong connections with mobsters, Mitch, it's that Donald Trump doesn't know anything. And I quote him in testimony and other things in full that show that, you know, things that someone who went to the University of Pennsylvania and studied economics should know, the way a grammar school child knows 2 plus 2 equals 4, you'll read what he actually testified to under oath, and I describe it as gibberish. And I'm sure anybody who reads it will go, that's gibberish. He doesn't know anything. And I've known this about him since within weeks of first meeting him almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, I saw an interview done with the ghostwriter of one of his books he's written in the 1980s say the very same thing, and he's been campaigning ever since against Donald Trump.
That's right. That was Tony Schwartz. And just disclosure, we have the same literary agent. Donald is P.T. Barnum selling you the Fiji Mermaid. Only the difference is nobody got hurt going to see the fakes at P.T. Barnum's place. It cost him a little bit of money, but, you know, people knew they were in on a joke. Donald has hurt people, lots of people. He's been sued repeatedly for civil fraud. And he doesn't see, you know, Donald believes he's never done anything wrong in his life. I mean, I don't know why Christians embrace this man who says, well, you get your little cracker and your little bit of wine, who can't correctly name 2 Corinthians, who says, no one reads the Bible more than Donald Trump, and his book is the greatest book ever written except for the Bible. And yet he doesn't know anything about religion, and he espouses views that are aggressively antithetical to Christianity and to Judaism, and I show this in the book. And I'm not talking about gaffes. I'm talking about page after page in books he wrote, speeches he gave, interviews, where he defends behavior that anyone with religious training, even if you're not a believer, should be offended by. And yet you see all these ministers and a few rabbis embracing him.
David K. Johnson, I do want to thank you very much for taking time to talk to us tonight. We are out of time, but we will have you back on after August 2nd when your forthcoming book, The Making of Donald Trump, comes out. I thank you greatly.
Thank you, Mitch. Bye-bye.
All right, and you are listening to Pacifica Radio coverage of the RNC. Again, I just want to say what I said last hour. We are a small team on a shoestring budget trying to bring you alternative coverage of this Republican National Convention. And when I say shoestring budget for Pacifica Radio, that's still a whole lot of money. You wouldn't believe we're actually broadcasting from the garage next door to the convention center. As always, though, we rely on you, our trusted and reliable listener, in order for us to be able to do all this work. So I know I'm speaking on behalf of Skia Muhammad and Davey D, Caroline Casey, who's going to join us in the next hour. We want to encourage you to support your local radio station in any way that you can. And we'll be back after this break.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio coverage of the 2016 Republican National Convention on your local community radio station. Pacifica Radio is proud to partner with community radio to bring listeners like you direct access to voices much like their own. And just what is community radio, you ask? Here are some answers.
The radio station is going to give us a chance to talk, a chance to respond when negative things happen in our community. Talk about what kind of future we want.
So there's a lot of work to be done as far as problems that we are facing right now as American citizens as a whole. This radio station would help out a great deal to get a platform started and where we could hopefully bring people in from all over the state to come in and sit down and try to come to some type of solution.
We want to educate the people on what's happening in their own communities, because they're not learning it in the local media. They're not learning it in the newspapers.
We will be here Monday through Thursday evenings of convention week to bring you coverage and commentary you won't hear or see on mainstream media. For more information on Pacifica Radio Network, visit our website at pacificanetwork.org. Now back to the Pacifica Radio coverage of the Republican National Convention with your hosts Mitch Jezerich and Askia Mohammed.
The responsibility of putting together this material is fully mine. I did it as honestly as I could.
Thursday, July 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, as part of the Real Cool Film Series, KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of The Connection.
Do you realize that hardly a day goes by without some item in the daily press concerning narcotics?
In 1962, a movie called The Connection opened in New York, then closed after two showings. However, the soundtrack was released, and jazz fans collected the album of this mysterious movie.
But imagine anyone wanting to use real junkies just to make a movie. Wow.
Again, that's The Connection, Thursday, July 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street.